Well, the holidays are with us right now, and the scammers are trying their best to ruin them for you. And on the show today, we'll talk about how to protect yourself, your friends, and your family. Larry Mueller here with my guests Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke. Michelle is the administrator of the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Division of Consumer Protection. Michelle, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, great to be here, Larry.
And great to have Michael Domke with us as well. Michael directs the DATCP's Bureau of Consumer Protection. Michael, always great to see you.
Likewise. Thanks, Larry.
Want to hear from you as we go through the show today. Have you received any odd phone calls lately? How are you making sure you stay safe on the internet? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Michael, let's just start with you. Why do scams, man, it seems they really increase during the holiday season.
Well, they do, and that is because the opportunity increases.
Yeah.
With the holiday season brings, of course, more shopping, giving, receiving, all that. But that in itself has different angles of how scammers can exploit the whole industry. You know, it starts with the, let's just say, gift cards. So we want to go ahead and gift those as a certain type of gift because everybody likes to get them and buy what they want. There's an opportunity there, and we've talked about many times about how gift cards can be exploited or be used as an opportunity to try and make a payment through a scam. But then also trying to get those gifts from point A to point B. You know, you have to ship them and they get sent through. So there's those shipping opportunities that we see those texts showing up of scams and how they want to verify should it be delivered. And so the scammers take advantage of that. And then third is the actual platforms themselves. We're doing a lot of online shopping. And so scammers know that. So whether they're using and creating fake websites for you to try and shop there and make those purchases or enter your information or any promotions that they'll send through. So all those different angles that participate in the holiday shopping season are opportunities for scammers to exploit it.
Yeah, and we can go into some more detail on that. Retailer promotions are everywhere during the holidays, Michelle. And what kind of trap should you be looking for there?
Well, you want to be sure you're reading the details that go with any type of holiday promotion. Some may be that they are for limited periods of hours. And I don't know that we want to call this anything fraudulent or deceptive.
Right.
This is just paying attention to those details where it can create confusion. And so, again, making sure that you know the hours that a doorbuster, the old term, might be available compared to someone else who may be offering a promotion. It might be that it is for a particular product, color, model, and you may think it's the latest and greatest where it's last year's version of something. And so you need to be paying attention to those details as well. If you're filling your cart online, is shipping included? Is shipping not included? Do you have to enter the promo code, not enter the promo code to get the discount? And are things retroactive or not? And this is all just basic holiday shopping or any time of year for to get those deals, but paying attention to those details.
I was thinking about one. I bought at a restaurant, I bought a $100 card that I can use at the restaurant, and then the inducement was I would get a $25 card that I could also use. But then you need to know that $25 card has to be used in between January and March.
Between January and March, not right now when you want to go out with friends. It's later,
it's later
to get you back. Exactly.
And
the details.
And you need to not forget about it in your billfold.
That's right.
until April.
That's right. You don't want to miss out on your free money there.
Oh, boy. Martha in Menominee has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Martha.
Hey, Larry. So yesterday I got in the mail 3 checks from Walgreens, supposedly, each for $1, each consecutively numbered and all issued on the same day. I do have Walgreens rewards, but they have never sent me a check. Now, there's nothing on the stub that says, you know, oh, it's a rebate or a refund or anything. You cannot read the signature. And I think this is a scam to get me to deposit it and then it will be run as non-sufficient funds or something. I think it's a scam to get into my bank. So help me out with this. What do you think?
Yeah.
It easily could be a fake check situation, which is what you're describing. If you deposit that and it comes back as a invalid check bounced, and if you've spent the money, insufficient funds aspect. But there's a really old scheme. I've been around long enough. No. There's an old one where they used to send checks that then if you deposited them, you would sign up for something. It was a form of validation that would get you to sign up and validate that you were willing to be part of a club or something else. And so, you know, it'd be interesting if you would actually send that to Consumer Protection just to see if an oldie but goodie is cycling through again with a new variation of something. So if you're willing to file a complaint and send that to Consumer Protection, even a photocopy. We don't need the originals. That'd be fabulous to do. And I'll give that information right here. Yeah. Usually we wait a while. Yeah. But you can reach the hotline at 1-800-422-7128. Or you can go directly to the website at datcp.wi.gov. And it, you know, it's kind of like a version of skimming on the credit card where they do just the tests of a dollar on your credit card before then they try and do a takeover. Or you might see what now are referred to as junk fees, but really they were these membership fees. When you bought something, they tacked on something else, and now you belong to this club. But originally it was done by checks.
Oh. So do that, Martha. It's 1-800 422-7128, or you can go online to datcp.wi.gov. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. On gift cards, someone else is wondering, what fees can be associated with gift cards?
Well, that is federal legislation that we're talking about that was passed. And really, the gift card should not expire for 5 years under the federal regs. And then if there are any inactivity fees that are part of a gift card, they need to be disclosed to you. Now, most companies nationwide have gone away with both of those, and inactivity fees don't start for at least 5 years. But all that would need to be prominently disclosed. However, if you're getting a reduced discounted gift card or a certificate through an auction or a charitable fundraiser or something, then those things are off the table. Then you can have those inactivity fees or can expire because it was part of a different kind of promotion.
You mentioned, Michael, online holiday purchases online and scammers know you're expecting a package. What's the latest on package? Talk a little more about that whole package delivery scam business.
Well, the scammer is successful to start with because they know during the season that a lot of people will be shipping things or that retailers will be shipping. And so they're really just sending it out widespread in a phishing attempt to see who might actually be waiting for something. So that's in the beginning why it's successful. And how they work is they oftentimes will include a phone number or a link that they want you to respond back to. And the notification will say there was some incident or situation that's going to delay your package. And so you either need to call to either verify some information such as your address, or they may say that, you know what, there wasn't enough shipping. And so we need you to pay the additional shipping so that we can drop it off. Calling that phone number is almost always going to lead you right to a scammer. Just like clicking that link also brings some dangers. Mm-hmm. One, it's going to most likely take you to a fake website, or it might have some malicious software that infects your phone. So either way, you don't want to do those. What you want to do is if you really are expecting a package, just go to a trusted source, oftentimes a website that you know that you ordered from or an app on your phone, and then verify whether or not there is a true incident with it. a lot of that information with a quick search in search engine will get you to that trusted website. You'll call it, you'll realize that, you know what, 99% of the time there's nothing wrong and you don't have to worry about it. Just ignore them.
Susie in Manitowoc, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Susie.
Hi. I have very unusual, we've gotten lots of those calls and we're pretty savvy to them now. But this one, it came from a woman who said she represented Whirlpool and that we had bought a Whirlpool microwave in 2018 and our warranty was up. Well, I didn't believe that because we never got one because the store we bought it from told us not to, that they would take care of everything, which they have. Okay, the offer was if you buy our plan, if your microwave or any Whirlpool appliance that you have, we will replace free of charge. Just replace, not repair, totally replace. And the plan was you paid, if you paid by check, it was $6 a month, six something. If you paid on the internet or through them somehow, it was eight something a month. I did not believe it, so I called our local appliance store where we had gotten our appliances, and they said, we never heard of this. So it was a big scam.
Well, Susie, thanks for calling. Michelle or Michael? Michael, go ahead.
Well, this is interesting because it probably got two angles. The first is your intuition that it might be a scam is certainly worth keeping at the forefront of your mind so that you don't potentially fall into that. But there actually are legitimate companies who do offer extended warranties or they'll reach out. The only caution that we try to emphasize is oftentimes those have terms and conditions that can be difficult to follow or the coverage may not include what you actually own. And so if you do think you want to participate in one of those, the best action to take is exactly what Susie did in reaching out to a local retailer, that trusted source, to say, is this legitimate or not? And if they are interested in that warranty, to verify that it is a real product. But again, making sure you understand the terms and conditions of what will be covered.
Yeah.
I also want to just throw out a concept for Susie is if she's on the do not call list, likely should have never received that call because it's a solicitation and we'd really want her to file a report about that aspect of it if her phone number is on the do not call list and she'd never signed up for an original warranty.
Susie, are you on the do not call list?
Apparently not.
Well,
how does Susie get on it?
You can go to our website at datcp.wi.gov and it will redirect you to the FTC's site to sign up and also give you a phone number if you just want to call in to register that way. But we have all that information online.
You can get that. I'd do that. I'd hang up and, listen to the rest of the show and then call.
There you go. If she uses the phone number that's there to register and she's, number's already registered, she's already on. It doesn't block the calls from coming and solicitors can still call you. So her number may be on and she just may not remember having registered. And so, I'd say if she calls the number from the phone that she received that call on and they say it's already registered, file that do not call complaint with us.
Absolutely. And if you still had the phone number, I suppose would be worth it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be great. So there you go. Maybe you should do that right away, Susie, before you forget about it. That's probably a good idea. You can still listen and call at the same time. Jan in Beaver Dam, we'll get to you in just a minute. A quick reminder here, Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke, our guests today from the DATCP's Bureau of Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today as we take a look at consumer protection issues. This is the holiday season. It's a tough time. We all feel probably more in the giving mood, and that's a good feeling, but make sure you're giving to the right people and make sure you don't get yourself involved in a scam. Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke are our guests today. Just to mention, at after 12:30, we'll talk about budgeting your money for the holidays. So that's the final segment of the show today after Michelle and Michael are finished with us. But right now, if you'd like to join in, I hope you will. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. Justin in Madison emailed, Justin, just wanted to chime in and say that one of the best defenses against scam is understanding how they work. One of the things he did a while ago is did a dive on YouTube looking for the people who expose scammers. They often show a lot of detail about how the different scams work, and they're not very different from one another. Being aware of this helps spot it before it happens. And just go to your website.
Absolutely.
Tons of stuff.
That we have tons of fact sheets. We explain the scams, how they work. Our press releases do that. We have social media posts so people know what's circulating each month, as well as Michael's team has individuals out giving free presentations in the community, and we have those listed on the website in a calendar. So we may be in someone's community, and they can just pop on over to maybe the library or some education center and hear about it live.
Jan in Beaver Dam has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jan.
Yes, good morning, Larry, and thank you so much for doing the show. Yesterday, early in the morning, I received a phone call from a gentleman who said he wanted to help me with my Medicare benefits. I don't feel that I need his help with my Medicare benefits, and I certainly wouldn't go to someone anonymously on the phone. And so I gave him zero information, and my caller ID said he was from Horicon, Wisconsin, and he had the phone number. He called, which means nothing. He called back a second time. I did not answer the phone, and I did report it.
Excellent. Michael?
Well, Jan, she talked about a couple of things, but first I want to thank you for hanging up and not answering those calls anymore. And that Medicare is, of course, we just finishing up open enrollment, which is, as we entered earlier, about what are the prime opportunities for scammers to take advantage. And Medicare open enrollment is certainly one of those. But also what Jan experienced was something called spoofing, and where these scammers will manipulate what displays on your caller ID so it looks like it's a local call. Sometimes it might actually even look like it's calling from the actual organization itself, and it's very easy to do, and scammers are taking advantage of our belief that when we see a local number, we pause and we think, well, maybe I need to answer this, and then that gets them on the call. So I'm glad that she picked up that was a scam. Certainly if you get callers who are asking for your Medicare ID number or any other information about that, please pause. Don't give that to them. Recognize that Medicare is not going to call you. And if you do get those scam calls, you can report them to Medicare directly, which is 1-800-MEDICARE, and then they'll be happy to make sure that you stay protected.
Jan, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Another popular way to purchase gifts is through social media, like Facebook Marketplace or advertisements off social media. I was trying to think of anything I'd ever... on Facebook, I once bought from Facebook itself a photo album of my photos from the past 6-8 years.
Oh.
And it was $30 or something. And I got the first one, and it was wonderful. It was really good, and it was like, all right, I got this photo album mostly of my daughter Emily as she was growing up, the first batch of, you know, just photos I had taken and posted on Facebook. And so, you know, 6-7 years later, I get another one, so I bought the next one, and that was fun. So I bought something on Facebook, but that's probably not the same as what you guys are talking about.
No, you probably bought it directly from Facebook or their services, whereas we're talking more the marketplace and that vendors or individuals selling goods, buying goods, kind of like an online garage sale potentially, or unofficial business, if you will. But we want consumers to be wary of this because some scams start here when the seller or even the buyer can ask you to move to a different communication method. They're moving you off the main platform, and that needs to be a red flag for individuals. If they ask for your money up front, before we know any of the details of the exchange, as well as if they're going to ask for a security code that has been transmitted to you, that's going to give access to your private accounts, and that's where account takeovers can happen. You know, you're going to get transmitted a security code. They're trying to probably log in as you get that security code handed over. So these are red flags we've seen happen on these different types of marketplace platforms, and we want consumers to be cautious and be aware of them. Never move off that platform. And that security code is for you and you alone and the actions you are taking, not to be handed off to anybody else.
Sherry in La Crosse has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I wanted to discuss, I really appreciate your conversation today because it just reminded me to call you guys when this happens. I do home care, and I get a lot of clients that complain about cable companies or phone companies calling them up and saying, you know, change your plan. We'll give you a new phone. We'll give you a laptop or a tablet or whatever. And they just have phone service, or they have the old cable service, and they can't work their smartphone, let alone get online for anything. And that's not so bad, but they badger these people. They call them and call them and call them. I mean, I've had clients say they've called, you know, three times today. And one of them is Spectrum here in La Crosse. And I'm just glad that you're doing the service because I just could call the credit bureau or you guys myself and let them, you know, this is going on when it happens.
Yeah. Well, Michael, go ahead and comment.
Well, I would first encourage those that are receiving those, if they are Spectrum customers, they still can let the company know that they don't want any more of those solicitations, and that should decrease them a little bit. Also, we would encourage, as we were talking earlier about the do not call list, if they're not on that, please encourage them to sign up for it. But also, if they continue to get those phone calls and are having issues, it certainly doesn't hurt to file a complaint with us to let us know so that we can filter out whether or not those are legitimate phone calls, if they're customers or if they're not, and certainly try to let them know that they don't want to receive those anymore. In regards to the actual calls, if they are trying to solicit, you know, that is part of the business, and those businesses are able to call their customers and try and promote, you know, additional products or services. But if it becomes harassing or habitual, there are some avenues we might be able to help with, and so you should certainly reach out to us.
Yeah, for sure. But if they're not customers, then that it's illegal for them to be calling, isn't it? If they're not customers, if they're on the do not call list?
If they're not customers and they're on the do not call, that is correct. Also, those businesses that do call in Wisconsin are required to register with us at the agency as telephone solicitors. And so there's a couple angles, and then that's why it's so important to file those complaints with us so we have awareness and that we can follow up and try and stop the behavior if we can.
All right. Sherry, there you go. Thank you so much. Mark in Osseo, your turn now. Hi, Mark.
Hi, just relaying a personal experience. We got a call from a nationally recognized bank, and you mentioned the name of that where they can steal the name of some bank and have it look like on caller ID that you're talking to a national bank that is saying, "Oh, you've been scammed," and then somehow talked one of my family members into sending him a fair amount of money before it became obvious, oh no, shouldn't have done that. And they actually asked to get into they said it was a scam regarding the checking account. And so they were given information about the checking account, and that had to be all closed and redone. And so, yeah, it's out there.
Oh, Mark, thanks. Michelle, a comment on Mark's story.
Well, Mark is describing the first stage of something that we are seeing pretty common here in Wisconsin, and it's increasing. And that's what we're referring to as scam snowballing, really, because they're using different techniques and chaining those together. So it starts really small, but it usually involves a trusted authority reaching out to you to say that you've been compromised in some way. Maybe it's your identity, maybe it's your bank account and access to that. And so you need to protect yourself by transferring your funds to this trusted source that they're going to give you. And sometimes that's to just convert it to Bitcoin, which will be Bitcoin that the scammer is going to access, not that you have or some other form of cryptocurrency. It doesn't have to be Bitcoin. And then what happens is maybe you identify that this is a scam after you've given some money. So here's where I really want Mark to be cautious of is this next phase where they swoop in and you get contacted by a different trusted authority. A government authority. They are impersonating the Federal Trade Commission, state consumer protection agencies, and saying, we understand that you have transferred some funds, you've been taken by a scam, we can help you get out of it. Just give us this information and help us pay the lawyer costs type situation. So they're piecing these together and trying to now swoop in as the hero as well into these scams. And they come in with that next phase as soon as you cut them off. Otherwise, they convert to a different phase of taking more money. It just goes on and on.
Oh, Mark, thank you for calling. Esty emailed us, their claimant in the Equifax data breach settlement recently received an email letting them know they'll get an online credit card with the amount they're due this week. They received an email on Tuesday with links that went nowhere. How do you find out if you've been scammed or hacked?
Well, you should be able to reach out to Equifax directly. There's a lot of contact information out there to verify if you were a victim. And then at that point, once you're speaking with a representative that you know is truly from Equifax, they'll be able to verify how those disbursements are being made. And so what I would say is, first off, don't, you know, if you get any more future correspondence, not to click on those links or call those phone numbers, but redirect that flow of communication so that you can verify if you did participate in it and you're the one initiating that contact to see how you were impacted and how that's going to be remedied by the company.
Mm. Al in Manitowoc, we'll go to you now. Hi, Al. Thanks for calling. Al, are you there?
I am.
Okay, what's on your mind?
I was scrolling through some of my messages yesterday when suddenly on my iPhone, I received a huge red flag warning, do not use your phone, blah, blah, blah. It's been infected. Call this number immediately at Apple to take care of this. So I immediately erased it because I do not ever nowadays at my age 82 answer anything I don't know anymore. If it's a phone call and I don't know who it is, they'll leave a message if it's important. If it's not, then it's something I don't need to hear or it's some scam. So both my wife and myself are very careful about anything that comes in that is out of the ordinary. Let's put it that way.
Hmm. Al, thank you for calling. Michelle, want to comment?
Well,
or Michael, go ahead. Michael, go ahead.
I'll steal it from Michelle on this one. Al actually pointed out a couple of the real cornerstones of just about every scam that we'll talk about. And that first one is the unsolicited text that he received or that email or that message. But then on top of that, it was that urgency. Something's wrong. There's something that you need to be able to react to. And the scammers want to create that quick, impulsive response. So you think, oh my gosh, something's wrong with this device, or I've done something I shouldn't have, and now I need to fix it. Because we always have that next step of, well, how do I fix what's wrong? And they're trying to get you to do all of that without taking a second to think about it. And so Al's reaction is perfect. We recognize that a lot of these are going to be scams, so you just delete them, don't respond to them. And again, taking that moment to say, wait, what am I doing before I react to it? And if you do think, again, there is some legitimacy to whatever message is being sent, redirect that communication so you're reaching out to a trusted source.
Al, thank you again for calling. You can join in, too. Some open lines get you on pretty quickly at 800-642-1234. Trista emailed us, I'm wondering, does the no-call list protect from solicited text messages? If not, is there a no-text list?
It sure does. There was a change, I believe, in 2014, maybe. But it definitely, it's phone calls and text messages that are solicitations in nature. So political texts and charitable donation requests, those are not governed by the no-call list.
There's no text list either.
Well, it's all the same thing. One name. Yep.
It's all the same. And so if you signed up for the no-call list some years ago, you're on the no-text list as well.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't prevent political, as we certainly saw the last year, I don't know how many hundred text type messages I got, along with everybody else. So political or...
Charity.
Mm-hmm. Even a fake one, maybe, huh?
Well, if it's a fake one, we hope you're hanging up. But yes, it those, as it relates to do not call, are exempt from the list. So if you're getting asked to buy something, warranties, trips, anything by phone, by your device, whether it's by voice or by text message data, please let us know about that if you're on the do not call list.
Mary in Edgerton, we'll go to you. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call.
Good. Well, I just had a question. End of the year, and I've had this car that I've had and I loved, but it's kind of past its days, and my husband said we have to get rid of it because he's tired of working on it. So I wondered... And I don't really feel it right selling it outright. Is there a charitable donation to give a car to, and which ones would those be?
Well, Mary, there are organizations out there. What I would suggest is if you have the ability to just do a quick search on what those organizations are in your area. I know there are several statewide that take them. We wouldn't be in a position to... know enough about which one's better or which one's not, but certainly just a quick search or reaching out will, I know that they exist. It'd just be a matter of you finding them and picking which one you like best.
Actually, WPR has one. Wisconsin Public Radio has one. If you're interested in that, or look, you know, if you're not, somebody else will do it, but you can go on to WPR and check in on donating a car. And so that's one place of others. Thank you, Mary. Karen in Watertown, your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I hope I can get two things in. The most important one is that I got a card from a company that is assurance something something, and it has to do with getting set up a trust account rather than a will or something else similar to that, which you always have to go through probate with. A trust you do not. But anything else other than that goes through probate. And the agent came out. I decided to go with it. I've already had an attorney. An independent attorney is assigned to you. And then you work with them for a certain amount of money. It was $3,000. And you go through all the paperwork necessary so that you have what happens that you want to have happen without going through probate. I looked it up online. It said that this is a company that started in Florida, and they have an A-plus rating in Florida, and now they are branching out to the rest of the states. They promised to work with the laws within each state separately. The attorney, it happens to be in Dane County. Never heard of him before, but he is a specialized agent attorney that can do the kind of work done necessary to avoid probate. And you have to do anything that's over $5,000 or $50,000 in value of estate. You also have to have probate done unless you have this particular work done by this company.
Oh, well, I don't know anything about that company, but we have done shows on probate and wills.
Yeah, so I think the thing here that, the takeaway, not sure what the question is that check the business out before you engage with them. And she was able to do that, seems to know a lot, make sure they're legitimate, especially since it appears she was solicited as opposed to going to seek this out herself and then, finding who she wanted to work with. So always check for complaints using the internet with reviews and complaints. Go to the state agencies that regulate this. This could be the Office of Commissioner of Insurance or the Department of Financial Institutions. You can use the Better Business Bureau and then, of course, the state where they were founded. And she talked about Florida here. So, doing your research before you engage. And certainly they're going to have her personal information when it's something of this nature. And you want to be confident who you're dealing with.
Yeah, because you're going to be giving a lot of your personal information.
Yep.
Pretty much all of it.
What's nice, she said she's dealing with an attorney who's local to her community. So that's good. Someone she can get in touch with and find and locate and check out easier as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Karen, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Vivian in Manitowoc, it's your turn. Hi, Vivian.
Hello. What I'm calling about is some of these Medicare things that are coming through. I don't know if you discussed them already because I just joined in a little bit ago. But anyway, a number called and their question is, have you received your Medicare card in the mail? Well, I tell them that I've checked with Medicare and they don't make phone calls like that. Of course, they hang up right away. But the other one that I'm calling about is on the internet. They've been advertising that through Medicare, you can get a $2,500 to $3,000 card usable at grocery stores like Walmart, Target, some of these other food stores. Is there anything to that, or is that a scam also?
Well, first, I want to thank Vivian for being a smart consumer, recognizing that Medicare is not going to call asking that information. They will send letters to verify whether you received it or that card itself. So thanks, Vivian, for making sure that you were aware of that. As regards to the promotion on the shopping card, I don't know enough about what that advertisement would be. It is possible that there is some type of company or business or even third-party support agency for Medicare that would be offering something like that to encourage participation or those recipients. But without those details, it would be difficult. All I would do is I would caution you before calling in and providing any information or making sure you understand what the requirements are to receive that. I understand you have that caution up front. So do using that same level when you're trying to see if that's verified. That's where I would go.
Yeah. Makes sense. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Vivian. And we'll get to Peggy in just a minute, but a quick reminder, visiting with Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from the Bureau of Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And you can call, too. The number is 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. We're taking a look at the consumer scams that are out there during this holiday season with our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from the Bureau of Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them along. Peggy in West Bend has a question for us, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I think this is related to the conversation today, which I'm finding very interesting. I use an iPhone and an iPad, and on the there's an app now. Well, there's been this keychain has been there for a long time, but now there's an actual app. It's a password keychain where you can automatically store your username and password for various sites that you use a lot. And it's really handy because then you can use Face ID. You don't have to plug in your password every time. Well, when I look at my passwords, I probably have 200 of them, which is too many to be in there. Should clean it up. But I would say 50 of them have a warning next to them, a little warning sign that says this password has been part of a a data breach. You need to change it. So when I go in and try to change the passwords, it's really not easy to do. I don't know if your guest would have any suggestions on how to protect that information.
Actually, we have an IT person coming up on the show, possibly on Monday. I'm not sure. I'll look that up. But in the meantime, Michelle, anything?
Well, I think the IT suggestion is wonderful, Larry. Let me just start with that. And yes, I'm familiar with the device and how that works and have run into that myself. And it's good to get that alert. And it's not easy to change, but go to those accounts and update those passwords. That is a notification that there may have been a data compromise. And we're always talking, especially during Cybersecurity Awareness Month in October, be sure you are regularly updating your passwords, using different passwords for different accounts. So that way, if one is compromised, someone who gains access to it doesn't have access to all your accounts, just that one account. So while I understand 200 can seem unmanageable, trying to rotate through and go through that process and updating the accounts directly with that platform that the password is for. And if you choose to keep saving it in your keychain, then you have it available to assist you in logging in from those devices.
And yes, we do have an IT person on Monday's show at 11 too, if you want to learn some more, perhaps, Peggy.
Right.
Yeah, but Michelle just gave you some good advice. Tom and before we go to Tom, I want to go to Colleen in Cumberland because she got a notice from a watch that she has that said her Social Security number was found in the dark web. She has frozen her credit. What else should she be doing?
Well, when this came up, when we talked about it during the break and that this message was out there, the thing I'm curious about is why her watch can find and locate her Social Security number. What's the connectivity and the storage of her data between her devices? And are all the devices being maintained with the proper security? So maybe her watch is talking to her computer where she has transmitted her Social Security number, but is she storing that in the memory of her computer that it can be out there monitoring for that? Or is it that she signed up for a service to do monitoring of her information? There's a couple of questions that aren't answered, and that might be good for Monday's show as well, those types of alerts that come through various devices. But I'd want to know more about her profile and just caution people in storing that sensitive data in their profiles, because if they're compromised, you're putting yourself at a higher risk level.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would just piggyback on that excellent advice. When she asked about what can she do, and freezing the credit is a great, but I would refer to our website where we have some great resources on what you can do to also make sure you're monitoring it, like checking your credit report, looking for mail. We have some great identity theft fact sheets that will help raise awareness to little things you might not realize are indicators of identity theft and that, in fact, it has been used.
Let's go to Tom in Green Bay now. Tom, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment that a while back, my son sent me a gift card. And before the card got to me, the letter was opened. And the card had come out. I don't know if somebody stole it or what. But my son had written down the number of the card, that tracking number.
Yeah.
He called, actually, the name, I can look like it was Cabela's. He called Cabela's. They canceled that card and issued me a new card electronically. And I thought that was really cool. So now every time we get a gift card for somebody, we record the number so we've got it. If they lose it or if it doesn't get to them, so it can't be used by somebody else.
Yeah. Michael?
I love hearing that practice is taking place, because that is one extra safeguard that everyone listening can try and take. Also, it's exciting to hear that Cabela's took the action to go ahead and make that right. One of the things that we talk about in our presentations when we talk about scams, and gift cards are commonly used as a form of payment that scammers like to use, is if you buy a gift card and you find out that it's been compromised, it's really important to call the issuing company as soon as you can, because we've seen that recently in about the past 18 months that gift card companies recognize how these are being misused. And so they're taking the initiative to go ahead and try and stop that and freeze those funds as quick as they can if they haven't been used yet, and then issuing a new card. But again, that's all about timing. So as soon as you realize that something may be wrong, exactly like Tom talked about, give that call and try and stop it.
Yeah, very good. Tom, thank you very much for calling. That's a good alert. Joe in Madison, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
My question is just about general scams. So with everything we know about our government surveillance capabilities, you know, how the NSA has done a remarkable job of watching everybody and tracking everybody, and the FBI too, and all this nonsense, how come these scams are still such a problem? Like, are they really so sophisticated?
Yeah, you're breaking up a bit. So if NSA and the FBI are able to stop a lot of things, how come they can't stop the scammers?
Because they can't stop human behavior. And the reason for that is these scams, as they continue to be maybe successful, or we do shows just like this where we educate, the scammers continue to tweak and adjust their styles and approach, or a different whole scam altogether. And so as we see that, some of the most basic fundamentals, such as we talk about phishing, phishing where you're sending out a messages to a mass market and just seeing who bites on it, that continues to be the most successful inception point for these scams. And that's been around for decades. And so until you can, I guess, get the message out and everyone recognizes exactly what a scam is, that's the only way that we'll prevent it. There's no technology that's going to be foolproof. The other part, too, is as these scammers continue to evolve and develop and get more and more complicated, or as Michelle was talking earlier about that snowballing,
yeah,
it's not just one. They recognize that, hey, maybe this one didn't work, so we're going to come at you from a different angle and another angle. And that's how we continue to see people being victimized.
Yeah, yeah. Joe, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Ken in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Ken.
Hi. I was listening a few minutes ago to a woman who called in, who was contacted by a company that promised to do a trust. And in my mind, she got incorrect advice. I'm a former attorney, so if I can just take a second to say what might be best advice. First, most people don't need a trust because your home, your auto, all your bank accounts, all your investment accounts can be transferred on your death to whoever you want to transfer them to. And that you just go into your bank and arrange for that transfer on death. So it comes down to what things you've got that are not, do not have titles. And if those are well over $75,000 in your mind, then you might have it for a trust. Or if your situation is much more complicated, passing on portions of your estate to competent family members.
Yeah, it's Ken, you were breaking up, unfortunately. So we were, I was hearing your advice well, and reminds me that we probably need to do another trust will show on the program. We do them fairly often. I mean, regularly, at least once a year, but I'm trying to think back to when the last time was we did one, and it's been a little while. So, you make very good points, and I appreciate your call very much. We are going to take a quick break to take a look at the news, and we'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News, and we'll be back with our guests in just a couple of minutes. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on WPR News as we talk consumer protection with Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from the Bureau of Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And we'll at 12:30 or after 12:30, we'll talk about budgeting your money for the holidays. But first, a consumer concern. I hope you will join in. Number's 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Lori in Beaver Dam will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Lori.
Hello there. This morning I opened my email and I received a very lengthy, detailed email that's threatening. It tells me that it knows my number, it knows where my family lives, and if I don't pay them a certain amount of Bitcoin, they were going to start to release photos of me and post them on the internet.
Oh, well, what they won't do these days, Michelle.
Actually, Michael and I have been spending the last month talking about this quite a bit. These are extortion emails, and we have seen an increase of these in the state of Wisconsin circulating around. They come by email and text message, and just like Lori described, they threaten the consumer in some way, that they have intimidating information about the individual that they're going to share with friends, family, coworkers, unless you pay money. Now, this is all just fake. I mean, it is a scammer. It's not legitimate. They often indicate that they may have a password of yours. So if you're concerned with that, go change your passwords. But the way they add some legitimacy to this is they often provide a photo of your home or your location, and it's taken from Google Maps. And that's just basic data that's out there in profiles that these scammers are getting a hold of. It's not as though they actually have been monitoring you, having access to your computer camera and in video recordings and things. So delete this. Don't take any action. Don't click any links. And again, if you're concerned about the password aspect, go change your passwords. But we really appreciate knowing that this is continuing to circulate.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Lori, there you go. Thank you so much. Don in Madison, we'll go to you next. Hi, Don.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I have a landline, and I keep getting repeated calls from a Maricollect collection agency, and I checked them out. They're apparently a medical bill collection agency, but I don't pick up the call. Should I be doing that? Should I just keep ignoring it, or should I call or get back to them and tell them to stop? I'll hang up now.
All right. Thank you.
Well, Don, if he does happen to answer one of those, certainly telling them to stop would be a step in the right direction. The next is to sign up for our Do Not Call list if he isn't on it. But then third and most importantly is just report those to us, because then that'll give us an opportunity to follow up and see if this AmeriCollect is registered to be making those types of phone calls. We can verify if there is, in fact, any relationship with Don to see if they shouldn't be contacting him at all, or whether or not that meets how their business operation should be handled. So those three steps are real simple, real easy. They all can be done on our website at datcp.wi.gov, and that should put him in a much better position to make sure he knows whether they're legitimate.
Okay, so datcp.wi.gov.
Yeah, we'll also work with our partners at Department of Financial Institutions, because they regulate collection agencies in our state. And so we'll verify that not only should they be soliciting or not, but are they using proper collection practices if they are a legitimate collection agency as opposed to a scammer pretending to grab collections there. So just so if others have collections out there and want to be able to check out those agents and what those regulations are in the state, they can go to the Department of Financial Institutions to do so.
Yeah. Don, thanks again. Joanne in Ripon, we'll go to you next. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to alert you and everyone who is listening to this program that I was scammed, and it's embarrassing for me to say that because I'm a retired lawyer in the bankruptcy field. So scamming can happen to anyone, no matter how smart you are, no matter how educated you are, you can be scammed. And what happened is my son and I were off to a trip to Florida, and we wanted to book a reservation down there at our favorite hotel, Ocean Sands. And so I did something really stupid, I know. I went online and I looked under Ocean Sands, and the website looked legitimate. I mean, it looked real. It looked like I was booking on Ocean Sands. They had all the right language. They had the right pictures, et cetera, et cetera. And I did not realize until after I clicked the absolutely no refund button that it was not the hotel's website. It was Hotels One. And so I went on my bank account and saw the debit that they took for $776. I called them and they said, well, we can cancel your reservation, but you're not going to get your money back. That's our money. So I called Chase and I said, can you put the money back in my account, please? This is what happened. So they put the money in the account. To make a long story short, they said that Hotels One said it was a legitimate charge, that I clicked the no refund button, and that they were debiting my account for $775. Eventually, I used to fight better, but I'm just too old to deal with it anymore. I'm tired. And so eventually Chase and I came to a settlement, and they lowered it to $400. And I thought to myself, you know, it's the holidays. Let me just take the money and run.
Yeah, well, so Joanne, Michael made a mistake.
Well, that's the one thing I want to correct quick is, first, Joanne, thanks for calling in and letting everybody know. But first is correcting that there's no embarrassment there. You were actually taken advantage of. You were victimized by what seems to be a very detailed and intricate scam. The second is you said that you were foolish or feel stupid. And I really want to correct that. And something we do at the, and now I can't control, you know, how everybody feels, but you shouldn't. These scammers are really good at what they do, and something we try to really promote at the agency through our advocacy is making sure that when victims are a scam, when someone falls victim to a scam, they're truly a victim. And when we look around, we don't know the situation when people are in it, what details are we giving, how complex it is, what scenarios, what emotional state they're in. And scammers take advantage of all of that. And so trying to dispel that belief that anyone is foolish or stupid, because anyone can fall victims for these. The second is, in doing that, we want to make sure that everyone is still encouraged to file those complaints with us when they do encounter a scenario where they may have lost money. Joanne took the great step of reaching out to her bank directly and calling Chase and saying, hey, I want to identify this. And, you know, for making those payments, contesting them with a bank or a credit card, but then also giving us the chance to help rectify that and also give some information on how there might be some other indicators and whether that scam touched different areas of your life that we can make sure get protected and you don't fall victim even further.
All right. Joanne, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, the datcp.wi.gov, that's still that website to go to get the kind of additional help that you may need. Phil in Mount Horeb, on to you now. Hi, Phil.
Hi. I'd like to ask a question about keylogging. It seems to me that whenever I open my computer and I type in my entry password, it would be an easy thing for a good nefarious online person to record that and to just stash it in my computer, and anytime I log on, they know. And so if I'm doing something like ordering something online and I use a credit card, they could just look for that credit card number. I'm sure that it doesn't surpass the limited abilities of some of these scammers to do that. I just don't know how you prevent a keylogger from getting on your computer, and how what mechanisms the consumer has to limit that.
Yeah. Sounds like another thing we can talk about on Monday on our IT, when we have our IT specialist on.
Exactly. I want the professionals to really give the details on that. But what we'll say from the consumer protection standpoint is that's where the advisories we give on don't click on links, don't respond to the phishing emails or things that we don't trust. And it's not that we don't want people to trust others. We need you to verify before clicking on things because malware can get loaded. We talk about updating your operating system for security, making sure you're running your antivirus software and you have protections in place and scans to be monitoring to be sure that your computer isn't being infected or disrupted in any way by the scammers from these different types of schemes and phishing attacks that are coming our way. So as far as the technology behind it, we're going to leave that to Monday's show.
Phil, thank you very much. You can call back on Monday if you would like. That's for sure. David in Deerfield, your turn. Hi, David.
Hi there. Thanks for all you're doing, and thanks for getting us out there so people learn about it. Just wanted to say that for the first time, last time I bought a phone, I bought insurance on it. And I'll be a gentleman and not say the name of my carrier, but the phone started going bonkers, and it was still during the insurance time. And I called them up. They sent me another phone, and it died with it died within about 4 hours. The battery was junk. Then I find out they're using refinished, refurbished phones, and I went to a place on East Washington Avenue that covers for them. It's a repair place, and the guy basically said, good luck. So anyway, I did get in contact with the Department of Agriculture with a fellow there, and he also sent some of my emails through to his superior, who responded. And I just want to say that they helped me immensely. Still a little bit in the works on this. It's not quite resolved yet, because when I turned the last phone in, they said it was junk and that I wrecked it, and they charged me $360 for it. So not quite done yet, but I just want to put in a good word that this department is priceless. The people are priceless. They will just bend over backwards to help you out.
Oh, David, thanks very much for calling. Well, that's good news to hear, Michael.
It is, and I thank David for the endorsement. I think that goes hopefully out to everyone listening right now and validates the services that we're here to provide for all of you and encourages everyone to take advantage of those, because we are here to help. We're here to help quickly and bring all those situations that you may encounter on the things that we're talking about here, or just about anything else, to a resolution.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it. Well, speaking of phone, Marcus emailed. He has had the same AT&T cell plan for 10-plus years, always under the impression that once you're on a plan, you may stay on it for life with no changes. Recently, AT&T increased the price of the plan by $10 each phone and added 30 more gigabytes of hotspot, which he says he doesn't need. Anyway, now they say because they've given him more gigabytes, he has to pay more. They conveniently then said he could switch to a less expensive plan, but which he would then lose other benefits of the current plan that they don't have on the new plan.
Yeah.
Can they do this, is his question.
Well, it's going to go back to his original contract. And what was the terms and conditions of that contract? Was it truly a lifetime plan contract? And services do change. Technologies change. And so companies don't tend to issue life plan contracts because they wouldn't be able to do updates and provide advancements in that technology. But with notice, under the state regulations, Once your contract is completed with its term, they can do increases. They need to provide you of notice. They can maybe change and alter your plan again with notice, and then options where there'd be no cancellation penalty on your side of things. Can they change the terms and conditions? Sure, again, with notice that they can do that. And so that might mean that they no longer have a service offering because you were grandfathered in, but all new contracts don't include that service offering because they're end-of-lifing it or something. So we'd encourage, if there's concerns, to file a complaint so we can help dig in and look at this and see if the proper notices, notifications under the law were provided.
Donna emailed us, just wanted to remind those who help our older folks with IT help that you have to be patient. Her mother-in-law was afraid to tell them that she was in trouble because she was afraid her, you know, what her husband was going to say about it. And a little kindness and understanding goes a long way, which you were exhibiting there, Michael, in just a minute ago in your comment.
Well, I was actually, I appreciate hearing that and the opportunity to piggyback even further onto that of making sure when we encourage or we encounter individuals that are having, you know, issues, or even if they're having a situation with a scam, is to be patient, listen to them, and don't prejudge. Don't jump into the assumption that you know what the answer is or what they're going through. Listen. Take that moment to understand fully what the whole scope is, and then at that point, help them understand and look at it objectively. And if it's just walking through a simple, you know, changes on IT or things like that, little patience goes a long ways.
Lisa emailed us. She has a credit monitoring had a credit monitoring company contact her, saying she has watching unusual activity. Notify her a credit card application for Chase. She called Chase, told them she had not applied for a credit card. They said they were deleting the application and she didn't need to do anything else. After a few months, she started getting emails from Chase updating her on her credit card journey. What should she do next? She did freeze her credit reports when this happened. So Chase said they were going to... eliminating the credit card application that somebody had applied for. And then after a few months later, she gets an email from Chase updating her on her credit card journey.
Well, one, I'd run a credit report and check your credit report to see if that extension of credit is listed under her profile. Or if there's marketing going on behind them having their information in the database. But then I'd follow it depending upon what's found with a consumer protection complaint so we can help evaluate that. Because what I was unclear of is who was doing the canceling. Was it Chase or was it the credit monitoring service because she'd never done the application? There's a couple parties involved in this transaction here in communication and that monitoring piece of it that we'd want to help sort that out and make sure that their protections are in place.
Yeah, for sure. Larry in southern Wisconsin wonders about the Chinese Salt Typhoon telecom hacking. Have you heard anything on that?
I have not heard anything about that.
It's something to look into, I guess. Phoebe in Fitchburg emailed us, can you give an offhand verbal pie chart of the makeup of scammers? That is... you know, what percentage are just one individuals and, you know, just, or is this a whole big bunch of people that are all working together, or is it just kind of like one person? It's probably a little of everything.
It is. We certainly see that where there are rings of people, and it's going to depend on the type of scam. Certainly, there were different rings for identity theft that we saw happening where actually traditionally different gang affiliations were getting involved in identity theft? Is it related to medical identity theft and in compromising those systems? But then we see call center rings. We see these extortion rings happening overseas that get pretty violent in some regards as well. But then there's the individual who's just maybe working with a buddy who's trying to take advantage, or some frauds that are individual in nature. And have a big impact for that individual, but are pretty small peanuts by comparison as to how they operate. So we work with our federal partners, and the U.S. Attorney's Office is able to prosecute the individuals that are involved in this, and the U.S. Postal Inspection Service can get it to the different money mules who are incorporated with some of the rings and things. So it certainly is a whole variety of things.
Yeah. And we haven't mentioned toys yet. I did want to mention toys since, boy, this is the toy buying season. And toys, probably on a lot of people's shopping lists, how do you make sure they're safe and age appropriate? You know, is there toxic material in the toy? And best practices around battery operated?
Yeah, absolutely. So as it relates to toy safety, always pay attention to the age grading or age range that's on a product. That is come to through years and years of industry study and safety standards put in place. And so consider the age of the child. It's not about the mental development and advancement. It's about the physical development of a child. So a small part is a small part is a small part for every child, no matter what they are doing in their mental development. And then you need to pay attention to those small parts, sharp edges, magnets, and other choking and suffocation hazards. Again, that's going to be labeling on the toy if it's brought in through the U.S. system. If you're buying something direct internationally, you're going to have to check it out yourself potentially, because it may not be going through the normal regulated channels, and you're going to want to do verification on that. So give it the bump and drop test and see what happens to it before you present it to a child. And look for those safety verification standards on a toy. Underwriters Laboratory, UL, ASTM, they're going to indicate if a toy has met those safety standards for, if it's an arts and materials, toxicity, if it's something like that has heating elements or electric, the UL labeling there. And toys in general will have an ASTM toy safety standard label on them if they've been through those testing and safety protocols. So if you are buying something secondhand, may not have packaging anymore. So you're going to have to think all this through on your own and really consider that and consider the age of all the children in the household. If you're getting a toy for an older child, it might have those small parts. What's the safe play space for the younger child so they don't interact? And that involves those small magnets and small batteries that a young child could get a hold of, ingest, and can be incredibly hazardous, if not life-threatening, for children.
And on that note, we're out of time. Michelle and Michael, thank you both so much for being with us. We'll look forward to your next visit for sure. Michelle Reinen is the administrator of DATCP's Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michael Domke is the director of DATCP's Bureau of Consumer Protection. Coming up, we are going to talk about managing your money during the holiday season. I'm Larry Mueller. The OJs, For the Love of Money. That song gets us into our next segment here. We are all spending more of it this time of the year. I am, at least. I bet you are, too. And what do we buy? Gifts, food, decorations. But, you know, really important to keep in mind that you don't want to end up with a huge bill come January. And we'll be talking about budgeting your money for the holidays a bit now with Claire Dahl. Claire is a financial and life SPAN educator for UW-Madison's Division of Extension in Dane County. And she'll give us some strategies to cut back on spending and tell you how to keep track of what you buy or what I buy. And as we talk with Claire, I hope you'll join in. How are you saving money this holiday season? Maybe you've got some low-cost gift ideas. Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Claire Dahl, welcome. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So maybe tell us more about how you and your colleagues help people out with their personal finances.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the first word that comes to mind is often budgeting. And in preparation for this show, I looked up a couple of statistics, and I read that a Gallup poll says that people on average spend about $1,000 on holiday gifts every season. But you also mentioned additional costs to holidays, yeah, like food, decorations, travel, maybe a new piece of clothing for a special occasion. So I think the holiday spending that we think of goes far beyond the gifts. But that being said, gifts are one of those things that we might have control over more than other areas of life. You might not want to miss out on travel to see your family, but you might be able to have a little bit more control over the spending that you're doing on gifts.
Yeah. Well, it brings a lot of stress for many folks, doesn't it?
Definitely. In one of my program areas, I do some financial coaching, and I meet with people who talk about wanting to reduce their financial stress. And what's been really interesting about that, like I said, budgeting comes to mind, but we like to use the word spending plan, because a spending plan is really about you taking control over where your money is going. And sometimes that feeling of having a plan or having control over it, just getting it down onto paper, can start to reduce that stress.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some other ways we can, you know, just reduce that financial stress.
Yeah, so I think that one of the things also that comes to mind right alongside with a spending plan or budgeting is tracking or just being more aware. So I wouldn't encourage anybody to just make dramatic changes or say, I'm going to change all of these areas of my financial picture immediately. You're probably going to get overwhelmed and ultimately won't be very successful. But if there's one area of your life that you know you might have a little bit of wiggle room on, these more commonly might be shopping outside of the holiday season or food purchases or, you know, the extras that we treat ourselves to. If you're just tracking that amount each month, you might find that you have a little bit more wiggle room than you thought.
Yeah. And I get that every time I go to my credit union account, I get the pie chart,
mm-hmm,
which shows where I've spent. And, you know, there are fixed costs in there, but I can look at, oh, that piece of the pie got a little bigger this month if it was on something extraneous.
Yeah, very rarely are people fully aware, especially, you know, like I said, with food costs. Groceries are very expensive. Things are just dramatically more expensive than they were just a few years ago. So sometimes we don't even realize how much they've grown until we really sit down and look at, you know, one of those specific areas to see what we're spending.
You know, there's this idea that it's impolite to talk about money with friends and family.
Yes.
What do you think about that? And maybe how do you talk about it in a, let's say, a constructive way?
Yeah. Well, I was really drawn to my position at UW Extension Dane County because I love talking about money. I love to make it normal and a topic of conversation. And I don't know if my friends and family always appreciate it. But I think it only takes one person to kind of broach the subject, and you'll often find that other people might be having the exact same thoughts that you're having. You know, maybe you think that everyone wants to bring four gifts for every person or even one gift for every person. But people in the same room might be thinking, I wish this was a little bit more simple or a little bit less stressful. So I think opening up the conversation is actually one of the biggest tips that we have, is rethinking what we're doing, pausing, be a little bit more aware and conscious of our decisions, and then opening up that conversation to see if holidays with families can be spent focused in other ways that aren't necessarily about buying gifts or spending money.
Got a relative or a loved one, let's put it that way, who's maybe struggling financially, let's say, without, how do you talk to that person, a loved one, without making them feel bad about their situation?
Yeah, I mean,
I think they usually start those conversations, as I recall, usually start with, well, you shouldn't have done this.
And... Sure. Coming in. So I think one of the reasons that people do not like talking about money is because there can be so many emotions and feelings behind it. And sometimes that might include shame or guilt. Which is, I think, what you're mentioning, is coming right in with the judgment is probably not the best way to do it. Because oftentimes, a person's financial situation has nothing to do with what they've been doing. They could be working hard. It could they could be employed full time. It could be an illness. It could be something completely outside of their control that has derailed their finances or made it harder for them to be more financially stable. And so I would say... coming to that conversation with really just open concern and allowing someone to know that you're there to talk to them. And if they don't want to talk to you about it, they don't have to. But saying, you know, I'm concerned about you. I know that this might be a challenging time for you this holiday season. Is there anything I can do to make it a little bit easier for you? And really letting them be the leader of that conversation. And like I said, if they're not comfortable with it, you don't need to push it or tell them, like you said, what you should have done differently or your own opinion. You could just open it up very gently to begin with.
Yeah. And let's talk about making that budget. You kind of mentioned a little bit picking an area, but talk more about that.
Yes.
Where in that pie chart, you know, might there be wiggle room?
Well, hopefully, right before the stress of holiday finances is not the first time you're sitting down to look at your budget or your spending plan. I think the other part of spending plans that scare people is they think you're going to bust your budget within the first few days and then it's over. When really a budget or a spending plan is something that should be reviewed, changed, looked at, modified. Like I said, it's really only to create awareness for you and a feeling of control. Because if you want to spend the $1,000 on average that people spend on holiday gifts each season, that is completely your right. But what if you wanted to spend $1,000 and ended up spending $1,500 because you just weren't paying attention and find yourself behind on bills in January? So again, it's the awareness piece that's the most important. And that will come alongside as you track or as you're paying more attention sort of naturally.
Yeah, there are things you know that you're going to spend money on. All right, you've got house payment or you got rent, you've got... All right, well, you know, I'm shopping at the grocery store. I'm going to spend about this much every week. There are things that are, your insurance bill comes every month. There are certain things that you know that are going to be there. So you have to kind of eliminate those. I mean, you wish you could eliminate them. But that's a big block of money, probably. Mm-hmm. And then you've got those other things.
Yeah, the more discretionary spending or the variable spending. And that is where we say you do have control over those things. You know, hopefully you're in a good enough financial position to have some discretionary spending. So that would be, you know, food, entertainment, clothing. And so maybe, again, you choose to splurge in the holidays, but over the rest of the year, you're setting aside between $20 or $40 a pay period, for example. So they do say that automatic savings through your financial institution is the most proven way to have savings be successful, because it's done for you and it's sort of out of sight, out of mind. So for example, $20 weekly would get you to about that $1,000 by the end of the year. Or if you're paid biweekly or have income coming in biweekly, $40 per paycheck would get you to that $1,000 by the end of the year.
Yeah. And that's something, hey, it's too late for this year, but... Why not make that a goal for next year if you haven't done it?
Exactly. It's very convenient that New Year's is right around the corner and you have New Year's resolutions. Like you said, if you're not quite ready to have that $1,000 or whatever the number is that you decide, it could be $100, it could be $5. It's really up to each person. But set forward a goal to have that automatic savings so that you're not hit next January. Another statistic I found was that 28% of folks are still paying off credit card debt from the 2023 holiday. So that goes back to showing a little bit of what you were talking about is, it sounds like you use a debit card for most of your transactions. Is that right?
I actually use a credit card, but I pay the balance every month.
Okay.
I never run a balance.
Well, that's good. So, but one of the other strategies is to only use maybe one type of spending. So if you were really going to stick to a budget, you might want to have an envelope of cash so that you're, you know, being more aware. People tend to feel like cash is a little bit more real sometimes, so yeah, they might be a little bit more hesitant to freely spend it. Or if you're going to use a credit card, just use one so that you aren't spending all over the place with a department store card, yeah, an online, yeah, account, a credit card, because that's going to be much harder to be more aware and track if you decide to at the end of the season.
Jonah in Green Bay has something for us. Hi, Jonah. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, go ahead. What's on your mind?
So I got a piece of advice for anyone who, like me, ends up shopping online and scrolling through all these deals at night in bed. Go wild, add stuff to your cart, stay with me, but don't go to your cart at the end of the night. Just add stuff as you think of it, and then go to bed. Wake up a little earlier in the morning and look at that same list, and just after some sleep, you might find that a lot of that stuff, you're like, I don't need this, or I don't even want this. But the dopamine of, like, adding it to your cart is what your brain was really asking for. And if you can't fall asleep, if you're like, if I did that, I'd just be thinking about my purchase all night. That's fine. Just wake up early, do the same thing, like, go wild on shopping, go to work, and then look at your list after work. Because you can't not go to work. That's something that's like, you know, you're forced to go somewhere, do other stuff for the day. It's not like sleep where it can keep you up. So just putting some time between adding to your cart and actually clicking buy.
All right. Well, what do you think of that strategy?
Yeah,
Claire?
I love that. I think any time you can create a pause or a delay on some of those purchases, you'll find out exactly what you mentioned, is that you're just caught up in the moment and you don't actually need or want that. There are teams and industries of people trying to make it easy for you to purchase, or those one-click purchases feeding you what you might be interested in or what you looked at previously. And so it's kind of up to us as individuals to fight against that big system of making it very easy for you to constantly be purchasing. So I love the idea of waiting till the next day, or realizing your own habits around, you know, the daily habit of what he was doing and noticing within himself.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Claire Dahl, our guest today, financial and lifespan educator for UW-Madison's Division of Extension in Dane County. You can join in with your questions or maybe an experience to share as we talk about finances with Claire. Number to call is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. How to get through the holidays without breaking the bank. That's kind of on our minds today. And saving and financial security, your own, as well as we visit with Claire Dahl, financial and lifespan educator for UW-Madison's Division of Extension in Dane County. You can join in 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. Claire, are there, you know, you're in a big county, I mean, in terms of population. Are there people with your kinds of skills in all the counties in the state?
Yeah, so extension is varied throughout all of the counties in Wisconsin. Some counties do not have extension educators within them, but on the UW Extension website, you can find the financial education resources available to all people in the state. There's also online virtual programming open to all people in the state, regardless of their county. But there are individual financial educators besides myself that operate throughout the state.
Kat in Green Bay emailed, one thing that Kat and a few friends are doing this year to spend less on gifts is doing a homemade food swap. They have plenty of canned goods and harvested food, and it kind of feels more meaningful.
Absolutely. Homemade gifts, you know, can be so much more meaningful, especially if the receiver is interested in that process, or maybe you do it with the person. Maybe you get together to share an experience of creating homemade gifts, which would be sharing that time with a loved one or a friend would actually be probably much more meaningful for the holiday season.
Pete emailed. He says he has a friend who's always lending his elderly mother money, and then she never pays Pete's friend back. Is Pete correct in his thinking that his friend should not be lending to his mother and enabling her? Can this friend help his mother become financially independent?
What an interesting question.
Isn't it?
Well, I think some would say that, I mean, from the very limited information I have from the friend, I think the friend kind of knows what he's doing, right? If she isn't paying him back, he's probably well aware of the risks. And so I'd probably just leave that be if I was asked that question. Obviously, if his friend is coming to him looking for advice, maybe you would think about ways to help the mother become more financially dependent. But maybe it's just an agreement between them and their family dynamic, which is perfectly okay.
Matt in Middleton has something for us. Hi, Matt.
Hello. This is something that worked for Christmas, but I think it works all year round. My kids' grandparents started doing this a few years ago. For each of the kids' birthdays, they would take that child out for dinner, and then they would give them $40 or $50. It's gone up a little over the years. And then they would go shopping with them. So that sort of sets the limit as to how much they're going to spend. But the thing that my kids always remembers, like, so what do you want to do with grandma this year? It's like, well, last year we went and did this. Like, well, what did you get? Like, I don't remember. But they remember the experience of being it just them going someplace with grandma and grandpa. So I think that focusing on experiences and personal time, and maybe set a dollar amount around that, like we'll take you out to Cracker Barrel, or we'll take you out to someplace that isn't going to break the bank to go eat. And then they get a small amount of money to go shopping. That's really meaningful to little kids and up through even the teenage years. Once they get closer to being adults, you know, then they're more like, you know, would you like just cash this year? It's like, why don't we just go eat someplace nicer? And that's the stuff my kids remember. So I think that's a great financial way to set a dollar limit, but then you get to go along with them and have an experience.
That sounds like one. That's great, Matt. I think, Claire, you got to agree with me on that.
Yeah, of course. Spending the time together, doing something different, doing something memorable. I was actually thinking about, in preparation for this show, how one time around the holiday season, some neighbors took me down to Chicago to see the Macy's Day holiday windows. And we literally window shopped. I don't think we even went in the Macy's. I don't remember eating out. We completely were participating in all of the festive and holiday spirit by looking at the windows. And it was incredibly memorable and meaningful to think about how are these people, exposing me to a new part of the holiday season that I had never seen in a new place, but we did not purchase anything.
Great experience. And Matt, thanks again. I really enjoyed hearing from you. And here's another email. If someone in your family sets a limit for what they will spend on gifts, even if they could afford more, should you reciprocate that limit or just go ahead and spend what you want?
That's an interesting question. I often think that the gift giver is the person who is guided more by their feelings or emotions. And so if a person really loves giving gifts, who's to say that you shouldn't spend more, I guess? It's completely up to the gift giver. I think the problem is when there's an expectation for reciprocation for those higher level gifts that it becomes an issue, because you don't always know what other people in your networks, what their financial situation are. And so I would hope a generous gift giver would be equally understanding for those that are a little bit more frugal in their gift giving.
Yeah. I was thinking about my own situation. A long time ago, I mentioned the credit card business. I had run a balance, and I came into a little bit of money, and I used it to pay off the credit card. And it's been many years now. Sometimes it hurt at the end of the month, but I always paid it off.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that I just didn't want to give away my money.
Yeah, discussions around credit, debt, you know, interest, those are all very personal decisions, and people can feel very attached to what they think is most important in their priorities. It's nice to hear that you were able to avoid that. I would hope that, you know, at least the best advice I can give is if you overextend yourself on a credit card, you're making at least that minimum payment on time, because we do know that a late payment is really going to damage your credit history or your credit score. It could also create late fees. And so, again, if you find yourself in the position that you've overspent this holiday season and you are carrying a balance, as many people do, obviously, if a quarter of us are paying it off a year later, you at least make sure that your payments are on time.
So how... There are lots of people in debt, as we were just talking about here, that can get to be overwhelming. What's the best way to start chipping away at that debt?
Well, if it's possible, you know, everyone's situation is different. And like I said, I don't ever mean to be disrespectful for people who have had personal tragedies, illnesses, or other things that affect their ability to stay out of debt. But obviously, the easiest way and most simplest way to think about it is to either increase your income or decrease your spending to free up a little bit more money for those debt payments. And also understanding that it's probably going to take a while to get out of debt in the current financial landscape where, you know, many people are living paycheck to paycheck or don't have a ton of wiggle room at the end of the month. So if you're not able to increase your income with, you know, a part-time job or a second job or finding a higher paying job, the other way to look at it is to decrease those expenses.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, many of those might be fixed expenses, but maybe there would be an opportunity to shop around for insurance or a different cell phone plan. Maybe there would be an opportunity to utilize, you know, certain public access resources around for a temporary period of time while you get back on your feet.
And it's probably important to make it a financial well-being. It could be just a part of your daily practices.
Mm-hmm.
So we tend to kind of forget about that. But I think if you think about it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So many people don't like to talk about money or don't think about it except for around the time when they have to pay bills or when they're in a stressful situation. But I really haven't been able to think of a parallel other than health and well-being related to food or exercise that we interact with as much as our finances. We make decisions every single day about what we're going to do and how we're going to live because, unfortunately, to exist costs money, right? I mean,
yeah.
to eat costs money, to have lights and housing costs money. And so financial well-being is definitely going to be better if you are cognizant, aware, and making those tiny little manageable changes that move you towards the goal. I think one of the things that has come up in this idea of holiday spending is it is so easy to get wrapped up in the immediate needs or the seeing that delight on that child's face or getting your best friend the thing they would love the most, when really what we should be thinking about alongside of those short-term payoffs is our long-term financial picture. And so if you're a person that has found yourself behind in January, how do you help yourself today not get into that more of a complicated situation in January?
Yeah, and I do like the idea of let's get started in January for next December.
Yeah, wouldn't that
be
amazing?
Even if we have a little debt, setting something aside.
Yeah, absolutely. Whether it's a $20 bill in your desk drawer or that automated payments through your financial institution, who's going to be upset to have an extra $500 or $1,000 at the end of the year that you sort of made happen yourself with those little choices?
I like that automatic, because once it's automatic, you learn to live without it.
Exactly. And it's not like you lose it. You can easily transfer it back from savings if you need to, if something comes up or your car breaks. But at least if that doesn't happen, you're not spending it on what we call spending leaks, which is just sort of, you know, small purchases, small things that just leak away from us. And then we wonder where all our money went.
Where'd it go? Claire, thank you so much. Here we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us. Hope we can do this again and down the road. And I will look forward to that, and I hope you will too.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you for having me.
Claire Dahl, financial and life plan educator for UW-Madison's Division of Extension in Dane County. Great to have her with us today. And, of course, always great to have our staff of people, Jeff Robbins, Lee Rayburn, our technical directors, our producers, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, our executive producer, the overall boss, Jill Nadeau. And I'm trailing along here. I'm Larry Beeler. Thanks a lot for listening, and stay with us. Lots more in store right through the afternoon on WPR News.